I know the answer. Oh, teacher, Peter calling me. Jack, what do you think about Pavlov? I don't know. How many of you kids like ice cream? Learning. Learning is dynamic. How do we learn? What's involved in learning? As you consider psychology in the process of learning, learning is that fundamental process of how we receive knowledge, process knowledge intellectually, cognitively, that is, with the brain, as well as an experience. That great Hebrew word, yada, meaning you learn by experience. You learn by doing. Learning is complex, complicated, but powerful. In fact, learning, you could date back to the ancient day when it came to families and fathers and mothers around the campfire, or of course we probably call it campfire, but for them in the ancient world, often coming around the fire was not only about warmth, but also about community. Community coming together, and where one of the dads would tell the story again. How do we learn? Consider Jewish methods of learning. God said, take this law, Moses, tell the people to tie it upon their foreheads and of course on their arms and tell them, teach them, remind them, remember, 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 morning, noon, day, night, learn. And then from there we have catechetical methods, catechisms, studies, didactics, all these forms of learning. Now we have university, college, learning. But learning is meant to transform. Learning is meant to help build and grow and develop the person. That's what learning is about. It's not just for the sake of learning facts and figures and also learning how we like coffee or how we relate to our spouse or how we parent a child. Learning is about transformation that leads to that experience of the coffee. It leads to effective parenting. It leads to effective marriage bonding, giving life, building community, just as the ancient folks did around that fire. But how do we learn? Learning is something that has to be started with the brain. We have to look at how the brain works and how the brain then operates when it comes to stimuli. And as we've been talking about Piaget and we've been talking about others, we're now going to look more specifically at Skinner, Thorndike, and others that have stepped back and said, now how does this all work together? From the brain to the external, from the child to the object, to how does learning work? Today we're going to start with Thorndike and Skinner. Thorndike was the first one to truly study operant conditioning. You probably thought, well, that's B.F. Skinner. Actually, it was Dr. Thorndike. Let's take a look. Dr. Edward L. Thorndike, 1874 to 1949, a psychologist. He was the first scientist to systematically study operant conditioning. And as that first researcher of operant conditioning, much like Freud and other contemporaries during this era, Thorndike was beginning to see patterns, Begin to see how humans interacted objectively and also made observations and then also calculations and so on. And began to develop what are now called laws. Laws that he defined as these, the laws of learning. The laws of learning. The laws of learning included the law of readiness, or that how individuals learn best when they are ready to learn and understand the reason for learning. So, the young man, perhaps, in that classroom who was called upon to talk about Pavlov, maybe he just wasn't ready to talk about it. Maybe he wasn't ready to learn about Pavlov. He just didn't care. Thorndike recognizes this, and he says, well, the law of readiness says that we have to be ready to learn and then, of course, understand why I must learn about Pavlov. It helps me to understand about that conditioning and that also that response to the conditioning that happens to me when I hear that bell ring or I smell that smell. And from readiness, we get to exercise, the law of exercise. Repetition is basic to learning. Things most often repeated are easiest remembered. Again, the law of exercise is repetition, which is basic to learning. Things most often repeated are easiest remembered. And so when you ride that bike, remember how we always, you know how we always say, it's like riding a bike. Again, that bike, and it's like I'm 18 again, or like I'm 10 again. And I'm riding the bike down the road, and I know how to swerve and how to stop with the brakes and how to use my hand signals, how to avoid traffic or how to respect traffic. There's that law of exercise. And Thorndike recognized this. He began to see in a person how the body and the brain and then the interaction became very important to exercise, and therefore there was a memory that began to happen. When we get used to riding a bike, and we haven't ridden a bike, and for me personally, I haven't ridden a bike in years. Too busy, life happens, this didn't become a big value in our lives, my wife and I. But when it came to running, running has become my main thing as far as exercise. However, if you had to bring to me a bike, 22 speed, or one of those mountain bikes now, I would say, sure, let's do it again. I would hop on and be like back when I did my bike tours when I was a teenager in Florida and also in the East Coast here in the United States. Had that wonderful opportunity, that wonderful now memory of riding 300 miles in a given week. Learning. So Thorndike said, be ready and also exercise like a muscle. It comes back. It becomes a part of you. Much like that Hebrew word yada. It becomes a part of me with what I learn and what I experience. So readiness, exercise, but then there's a law of effect. The law of effect is learning will always be made much more effective when a feeling of satisfaction accompanies the process. Again, learning will always be much more effective when a feeling of satisfaction accompanies the process. In other words, there's a positive outcome. There's a satisfaction, or positive, negative, the whole process. If there's satisfaction at the end of the day, and maybe I had a lot of trial and error in how to make my coffee with the coffee maker, or how I take the cap off this water bottle. Let's see. Okay, I exercise it. I twist, but not too hard, and just that much, as opposed to wildly turning, you know, twisting off or not twisting enough. Just somewhere in between, I can enjoy my water. I am now satisfied. I now understand that I twist just so with that that bottle of water. The law of effect. Ready, exercise, effect. And then it becomes a part of me. It just comes natural to pick up that, to know how many scoops of coffee grounds and how much pressure to put on the cap so I can be satisfied with my coffee and with my water. So Thorndike has helped us to better understand how learning is by way of operant conditioning, the pioneer that set the path for Dr. Skinner. Now, Dr. Skinner takes us into operant conditioning as well. He expanded it. He brought more science into it, observation, as well as trial and error and findings. See, for Skinner, he said that learning occurs based on the consequences of behavior. I'll say it again. Operant conditioning, according to Skinner, is learning that occurs based on the consequences of behavior. So if I learn that I'm not supposed to touch that oven, again, mom says, don't! Ouch! If I go to touch the oven, I get slapped. My mind then retains that. There's punishment. Of course, with some parents, they say it's punishment enough that the child went up to the oven again, even though I verbally said to him or her, don't touch. But she or he touches the oven and burns that little finger. Ouch. Mom, Dad, and the tears just come down, and the little boy, little girl realizes that that's punishment enough in addition to the slap. But then they learn, oh, the slap means I love you. Interesting how that parallels with us and God. But that's another discussion. Skinner brings us into this whole understanding of how operant conditioning does bring us into this understanding of how we learn through punishment, but also through reward. So Mark, when you complete this task, I'll have a full cup of hot coffee for you. Okay, so I do the task. Here you go. Reward. I like black coffee. No sugar, no cream. Of course, some of you are thinking, boy, that's punishment. To me, it's amazing. Ooh, yeah, hot. Gets me going. And I feel satisfied. I feel that I can do that task again or something like it because I was rewarded. Skinner saw this with his Skinner box. The Skinner box became his lab. Now, the Skinner box, as we learn about operant conditioning, was this. The Skinner's operant conditioning chamber, called the Skinner box, was designed to teach rats how to push a lever or lever. This behavior is not natural to rats, so operant conditioning with positive and negative reinforcement were performed in order to teach the behavior. Now, the positive reinforcement, a rat was awarded with food when he pressed the lever. Negative reinforcement, a rat was able to turn off electric shocks produced by the floor by pressing the lever. The shock was the punishment. Ouch! And so the rat learned how to turn it off. Hence, the Skinner box was that lab that Skinner used to use rats to apply his principles, then applying it to human behavior. Very similar, not the same. After all, we aren't rats. We're humans. And yet, as Skinner continued to do these experiments, as he continued to cross-apply the whole deal of how the rat interacted with the positive reinforcement, how the rat responded to the negative reinforcement, the punishment. Skinner began to apply it, in my opinion, a little too much to the human condition and the human behavior. Why? Because in this experiment, Skinner began to develop another theory that human beings respond to punishment and reward and behave based upon punishment and reward as a result, and not due to spiritual belief necessarily. It's almost as if he minimized the human experience to punishment and reward. You do the task, you are then given the reward. And if it's done well, you give even more reward. Or if you do the task badly, you are given the punishment. Or if you're in a place where you are not to be, you are then punished. Or if you are in the right place, the right time, for the right reasons, for the right things, you're rewarded. And so it almost seemed like Skinner was saying, we're just a bunch of automatons at times. Or, I mean, at least we have these interactions as human beings, these connections. But more so about connections with punishment and reward. And therefore, scientists like Skinner truly did divorce the human experience with spirituality. Well, let's get more to the Skinner box again. What else did Skinner see? Skinner saw this with the Skinner box. He saw negative reinforcement as this is an unpleasant electric current that ran through the floor of the rat's cage, as we cited in the previous slide. Initially, the accidental lever pushing turned off the electric current. That the consequence of avoiding something painful, removal of an unpleasant stimulus, ensured that the rat continued to push the lever to avoid that shock. So again, that has to do with the fact that there's reward with the food, punishment with an electric shock. And from there, we then understand how Skinner developed his theory. But then we also want to break down his theory. You see, Skinner also defines specifics within this whole theory of punishment and reward and operant conditioning in general. What are the other components here? The first one is the reinforcer. The reinforcer. And the reinforcer goes like this. There's a premise behind reward and recognition. There's a reward. What comes about? Why the reward? Well, there's a higher motivation and a greater output. In other words, any event that strengthens or increases the likelihood of a behavior then is the reinforcer. Again, any event that strengthens or increases the likelihood of a behavior is a reinforcer. So if I know that I'm going to get ice cream after I do my homework as a kid, as well as go to the playground to play in the monkey bars and to play the merry-go-round and run around and have a good time with my buddies, there's a higher motivation then to do my homework. And Skinner saw this. The reinforcer is how then the ice cream and the playground time begin to reinforce my better behavior as opposed to my worse behavior. Hence, a greater motivation and reward. So from reinforcer, we can also look at what Skinner said about this. A person who has been punished is not less inclined to behave in a given way. At best, he learns how to avoid punishment. Well, isn't that the truth? See, the punisher, as opposed to the reinforcer, is this. Any event that weakens or decreases the likelihood of behavior. So, for example, if I don't do my homework, if I sulk or if I put up a fuss, if I cop an attitude, a bad attitude, that is, if I'm belligerent, if I'm obstinate to my mom or my dad or both of them, or if I tend to do other things in the house to destroy property, I'm not going to get the ice cream, and I'm certainly not going to get playtime at the playground with my buddies. What I will get is probably, and of course, depending on the culture, a spanking or, again, off to your room and then no playground time for a month, depending on how severe the offense is. Hence, punishment. So, as a kid, I learned, okay, if I then do not do my homework, if I use my crayons on the counter all the time and therefore deface property in the house, if I sulk and I cop a bad attitude and I'm always sultry and obstinate, well, then the punisher, that is, that Skinner defines here, is the fact that I will then go without the things that I enjoy and give me satisfaction and peace and also exhilaration and so on. Hence, the reinforcer. So, reinforcer, punisher. That helps greatly understand, too, how humans behave in this manner, especially when it comes to being a parent. Wow. So, from punisher and reinforcer, we then look at how this all fits together. Reinforcement theory of motivation. How we learn through reinforcement. And we see then the driving forces and also the restraining forces. Positive reinforcement, when new behaviors add positive consequences. Negative reinforcement, when new behaviors remove negative consequences. And then punishment, when new behaviors add negative consequences. And extinction, when new behaviors remove positive consequences. Therefore, we remove the stimulus, which we've discussed before in the previous video. So, positive and negative. But also, Skinner, you saw the slide just for a brief second. Skinner also saw scheduling. What do I mean? Scheduling has to do with the fact that as I help my child learn what it means to behave well, to obey his mom and dad, and to get along well with others, and so on, I may, in fact, schedule a task I know he or she will complete well, and then I give her or him that reward, whatever it may be. Again, my thing is coffee, or again, that great bottle of water. Ooh, okay. Of course, for the child, it's the ice cream, it's the merry-go-round, it's, oh boy, go to grandma's house? Provided grandma and grandpa are fun to be with. Okay, I can do that, okay. And I know exactly when to do it, on that Friday afternoon, because then I know I can then continue to build trust, and then maybe even, and you're thinking to yourself, now, Dr. Mark, that's manipulation. Actually, this is probably a component of manipulation. How it happens in a negative way, in an unhealthy way. However, in a healthy way, in a positive way, we then understand that scheduling these rewards, scheduling these things of reinforcing good behavior can benefit the home and benefit the community. Let's take a look at what I mean. Reinforcement schedules. Skinner defined it as this. Number one, continuous reinforcement reinforces the desired response each time it occurs. So in other words, if I want my child to behave well and have peace in the home, I'll give the simple task of saying to her, if you put the nice cups on the shelf, then we'll be okay. And then we can have some ice cream. Or maybe we'll go to grandma's house. Or give options. Because that's a whole other thing. What do you learn as far as continuous reinforcement? What are the things that we then give to the child that won't spoil the child? Of course, that's more of a moral issue. But this is going, again, following Skinner's theory and application. So there's a continuous schedule. Every Friday we do this. And every Friday after this task. I know you can do so well, little Susie. We're going to go to that merry-go-round and have a great time together. Well, there's also, from continuous reinforcement, there's partial reinforcement, which is, by definition, reinforces a response only part of the time. Though this results in slower acquisition in the beginning, it shows greater resistance to extinction later on. So, as I said before, you see these continuous rewards, and of course the partial reinforcement is where we want to maybe redirect a child's behavior. We want to maybe shift what we do or shift what another person does in the workplace, because you can use this in the workplace too when it comes to employees as well as volunteers. Redirect them to other meaningful tasks that will then, because you know, things have changed. How do you get people to do it? You walk them through gradual change, and this is where continuous reinforcement and partial reinforcement can work together. Rewards, and then not as many rewards. Oh, you keep on doing that task, for example. Okay, Susie, you're going to keep on putting that those cups on the shelf, but let's stop doing that. We're going to shift over to this. And so there's a little reward, but then she begins to learn, okay, this is not bringing me the reward I used to have. And then we condition. We then redirect the behavior. Perhaps you're thinking about this as far as the volunteers that work with you and work for you in your ministry. Or, of course, working with people who do work for you and they're paid. And you need to get them in a new track. Reinforcement. Much like these kids, too. These kids here, adorable. This little girl, she gets the, oh, I'm a great student certificate. And the other little girl, I get a dollar every time I do whatever that is. And then, of course, these little girls also know the value of being given M&Ms. And chocolate is amazing. Great in the mouth. It won't melt in your hands. And so as we look at what Skinner gives to us, as well as Thorndike, operant conditioning gives us insight. And by the way, we're going to talk about insight here pretty soon. Insight into how we